Everyone, thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. It's November 2018, and you're listening to episode 96 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Megan Alman. Megan is a national speaker and writer in the area of pro-life apologetics with the Life Training Institute. Megan has written a web-exclusive film review of the new Netflix documentary, Reversing Roe, and her article is called Reversing Reason, and it's available free online at our website, equip.org. Megan, it's good to have you on.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Melanie.
Well, both of us saw this documentary, and I want to tell listeners you can go right now and watch it on Netflix, and I even read in some entertainment trade papers that they're thinking this might be possible Oscar nomination for best documentary. So I think this film will have some impact. And also it was one of the executive producers is the actress Eva Longoria. And I was looking some different articles about the filmmakers. And in a recent interview that they gave, they stated that they wanted their documentary to answer this question, quote, how have we gotten to a place that the issue of abortion has become so politicized that it is so influential in presidential elections? How did it move from a healthcare issue or a medical issue to become this political wedge? Unquote. So, Megan, do you think that they answered this question in their film?
Well, the short answer is not really, because they missed too much with what they chose to cover in telling the story that they chose to tell. Really, they missed the fact that it was Roe versus Wade in and of itself and the subsequent Supreme Court decisions that have made this issue political. Because, you know, since that decision, the federal courts, I mean, some would argue operating under judicial supremacy really kind of have wrested the issue from the other two branches of our government and in that sense from the American people, from having a say on the issue. That's what made it political. And when the filmmakers actually chose to paint the pro-life movement in the way that they did, because the film is overtly pro-choice, pro-lifers are more or less painted as these overly religious people, these religious zealots who are out to just kind of emotionally fight this issue. They do a lot there. The first thing they do is discount religion as real knowledge, which misses a bunch there because they have so-called religious views of their own that are kind of driving their own view. The other thing that they missed is that if there was a response from faithful Christians, it was no different than any response Christians have had in history to decisions or to times when Christians have seen that an entire people group is being unjustly treated, and in this case, killed through abortion. They also didn't interact with any of the, really any of the pro-life intellectual arguments that there are. I kind of ignored some of that, and we can look at that as we talk about the film a little bit more. But I think the other thing they did in looking at this and painting it the way that they did, you know, the pro-choice side of things, wanting to protect women versus these religious zealots on the pro-life side, really missed the diversity of the pro-life movement. There's a rich diversity of people who are pro-life, not just Christians. There are pro-life atheists, pro-life feminists. There are pro-life people from every color and creed and gender.
And it seemed interesting that this documentary was released by Netflix right at the height of the most recent Supreme Court justice confirmation process for the new Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. And that's been a very polarizing process over the last few weeks. So how did it seem that it, like this movie was to set us up for what we've actually been experiencing?
Yeah, it was eerie the way that it set it up. Well, to the filmmaker's point, it was politicized. I think what we saw over the last few weeks really was about abortion. And that was reflected kind of in the discourse that we saw as it played out in the media, as we saw coverage of the hearings and whatnot. What I saw was very emotionally fueled. kind of ignoring more or less valid arguments that were being made, and just kind of going, the back and forth was really, it was just emotion. It was very kind of postmodern, which is what we see in a lot of modern discourse. And that was unfortunate because, you know, in this situation where we have the hearings going on, and I think we were walking away from it kind of going, I don't know fully what to do with all of that. If there was a victim there, whether it was Christina Blasey Ford or Brett Kavanaugh, then they were further victimized by kind of the media coverage making it about what it did. And really, walking away, as my friend Mike Sherrard wrote recently, I think that the sad thing is that there was a lot of common ground we could have. Nobody on either side of the issue, as it were, wants a world where victims of sexual assault, if that's what Christine Ford was, can't come forward and be heard. And nobody on either side would say that they want people being able to be falsely accused without evidence. So we're kind of walking away from this thing going, man, this really was a politicized issue. They did make it all about abortion, where really here we needed to make some careful distinctions and look at this particular issue and what was going on.
Because abortion has become an issue that's so politicized, and you know, the film explores some of those roots, I think it gets away, like you said, with some of the more philosophical issues regarding the very thing that we're talking about. And it doesn't seem that the film, which I saw, wrestles with those. Before I ask you about some of the stories in there, I just wanted to respond to what you said about they painted some people as religious zealots and let our listeners know that basically, the pro-life movement is only shown through the actions of some more extreme groups like Operation Rescue. And back more than 20 years ago in 1995, the Journal did a pro-con kind of debate with two different Christians, Francis Beckwith and John Feinberg, regarding how we should respond to civil disobedience as Christians. And, you know, is Operation Rescue, is that something that they're doing that they should be doing, or should they not be doing? And how do you kind of navigate those waters? So I want to tell listeners that that article is really good food for thought on both sides of the aisle about Operation Rescue's tactics. And that is free at our website, equip.org. But that was one thing that I agree with you that left me with questions. In other words, if I was somebody that's leading pro-life, I feel like I have questions, philosophical questions, that I'm not sure that the movie really answered because it pivoted to a lot of political things. But going back to the movie itself, so what stories does the film Reversing Roe follow?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it kind of juxtaposes some different things as it goes. Centrally, they're following kind of the unfolding of Roe versus Wade as they perceived it, and it begins kind of with the pre-Roe era where abortions were taking place, illegal ones. Some were done therapeutically in hospital settings. In fact, I think most were, but they also were the ones, the coat hanger abortions that we hear about that were more dangerous and done in these obscure settings. And so they really highlighted that, and then the unfolding of Roe. And at the same time, you're kind of jumping in with more recent attempts that states have made, especially Texas, to restrict access to abortion. And through there, they interview several people. I did find it interesting that throughout the entire film, they interviewed both pro-choice people and pro-life people. I read just an article recently as I was prepping and kind of went back in my head and goes, yeah, this is exactly right. There were 13 pro-choice women interviewed in the film and only one pro-life woman. And I found that a little bit surprising, but there you have it. That's kind of the story as it unfolded.
And I think that the one pro-life person that was a woman that they interviewed was in the political realm. So there was nobody still bringing up some of those issues. They did interview a lot of various politicians, attorneys, and then I think to maybe give it a more human aspect of actually, an abortion provider, they interviewed quite in depth an OBGYN who she's like a younger mom, and they showed her as like a mom going to work, and this is part of her work, and just, it was really matter of fact. I do want to give also to our listeners a bit of a trigger warning that if to watch the film, there are graphic images in it that could be upsetting to some viewers. And also, even though they feel like they're showing some medical procedures, they are showing people getting abortions. So that should be, you know, noted if you're going to watch the film, as well as showing various different demonstrations at which some of the Operation and Rescue people show very graphic images as well. So if those are upsetting, I would want listeners to know that we warned them before they viewed this film. Do you think this film, you know, considering Roe versus Wade, do you think it offered a balanced view of Roe versus Wade? And again, it just pivots to the political. They're really talking about this decision, who decides, and they never really interact with, well, what is abortion? You know, pro-life people claim it's something that they don't believe it is. They say it's a medical procedure, but they never even address other more thoughtful sides of it. So as it relates to Roe, do you think it's balanced?
No, I don't. And really, for exactly that reason. Now, I understand they were trying to make a political film, but as someone who examines this issue from a moral perspective, when you dismiss that side of it altogether, then you don't get a full picture even of the political side of it. And you're right, they didn't examine the issue itself at all. No one defined it. And we can, you know, bring that up in a second. But when it comes to Roe in particular, you know, they center on this idea of this choice and who gets to make this choice. But again, what choice? The choice is never spelled out. Or if it is, it's done with wording that doesn't really get to the heart of the issue. Things like the choice to end a pregnancy, typical things that we would hear in today's discourse. But no, there are pro-choice and pro-life scholars both who would look at the law itself and you know, Justice Harry Blackmun's opinion that he wrote at the end of the decision. And they would say, this is just not good law. Francis Beckwith, who you mentioned just a minute ago, I think he'd be a great go-to in his book, Defending Life. He has a full chapter on what he thinks of Harry Blackmun's opinion. And he kind of addresses some things in it that have to do with you know, the misrepresentation of abortion law prior to the, you know, kind of the mid-19th century. There were some historical resources that Justice Blackmun used that have been deemed faulty by pro-choice and pro-life scholars, and just kind of the questionable approach to defining personhood under the 14th Amendment as the law did. So in not taking on kind of the full back and forth about it and really the intellectual the center of it, no, I don't think that they fully represented a balanced view of Roe versus Wade. And that's not even to mention the fact that Jane Roe herself, other than being named as, you know, someone involved in the case, was never mentioned. Norma McCorvey's story, which I think is very pertinent to this entire debate, wasn't even brought up. And you know, for those who don't know, Norma McCorvey was Jane Roe and came forward later. She never actually had an abortion as a result of the decision. And she actually later became a pro-life Christian and fought to end abortion.
In your film review that's on our website, you write that the film talks around abortion without ever really talking about it at all. And I was really noting that myself. I, you know, like you said a few moments ago, they would say, well, it's to end the pregnancy, but they don't define what pregnancy is. I'm also surprised that they don't really mention some of the comments that have been used in the past by former President Bill Clinton, like the goal is to make abortion safe, legal, and rare. And they don't mention any statistics proving his assertion that we should make it rare. There's just nothing that's of any kind of, like, there's no data. It's just a bunch of stories in this political kind of just hodgepodge of ideas that doesn't even answer the question. Well, and especially when you see abortion being done, the OBGYN just says to the lady, okay, now I'm going to go in and we're going to be removing the pregnancy. And I think any person, pro-life or pro-choice, I mean, yeah, you'd have to admit, okay, what they're doing right now is they're removing a fetus. It's not like, you know, they're removing something. They're removing something out of your body. What is that? They never define that or even define why their view of the choice to remove the fetus is your choice to do it, and why they don't even address, is it, you know, human? Is it a person? How does the law, even from a legal standpoint, you know, uphold their own view? So can you tell us what you think about them not really defining what abortion is or defining what it means to remove a pregnancy.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I do think about it. You can't talk about Roe versus Wade, which centers on abortion, or the fallout of that and as it's kind of evolved since then, without defining what abortion is. I think Christopher Kaiser, the ethicist, does a fantastic job of defining it in a way that is accepted on either side of the spectrum, from pro-choice to pro-life. Kaiser would call abortion the intentional killing of a human fetus. That begs no questions across the board. So the real argument, you know, that where the argument centers is, well, what is meant when we say fetus? I'm okay with that term. It's Latin for little one, and it is a human fetus. So we know what kind of thing it is. But in missing that, we miss the entire intellectual side of the debate. And to avoid that is just intellectually dishonest, I think.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Megan Almond, and Megan has written a web-exclusive film review of the new Netflix documentary, Reversing Roe, which is available on Netflix right now. And her article is called Reversing Reason, and it's available free online at her website, equip.org. And to read more articles that grapple with ethical issues, including the issue of abortion, from a Christian perspective, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50. And to subscribe online, please go to our website, equip.org. So when I was watching the film, it seems at one point they were going to highlight the pro-life argument. I mean, they do talk to a lot of people in the pro-life movement, mostly men, and it seems like it was going to be highlighted. Did you think that it was highlighted at all?
Well, I actually got excited at one point, and it's probably the exact point that you're talking about. It was Texas Right to Life Representative John Sago, and he started to say, you know, the real question at the center of this debate is, what is the status of the fetus? Is it a person deserving of rights? And in that moment, I thought, they're going to do it. They're going to make an intellectual argument, and they're going to grapple with it, and this is going to kind of get at the crux of where the debate really lies, and they left it there. They never picked that question up. They never bothered to try and give an answer. The story kind of just went on with that one little moment. I think the moment was important because that is the question at the center of the debate. But yeah, the filmmakers never grappled with it after that.
So because they didn't grapple with the pro-life argument, what errors does the film make, and how can viewers watching the film understand when these errors are happening?
That's a good question. The way that you can understand what's happening, because what is happening there is that in every claim that justifies abortion, kind of following from that with very few exceptions, the people making the claims are assuming that the unborn is not a human being like you and me. So that's where they don't answer the question that was posed at that one point in the film. And when they don't answer that, the way you can spot that is anytime somebody makes a claim, this is why abortion should be allowed. This is why abortion should be allowed. You need to ask yourself, and this is what we teach at Life Training Institute, would this be okay if we were talking about a toddler? Would this be a good enough reason to justify taking the life of a toddler? The reason is that's something concrete that we can think about. We know that toddlers are human beings like you and me. And our question is, as John Sago asked, is the unborn human like you and me? So when people assume that they're not at the outset, they beg that question that he asked. And you can look at a few of the claims made in the film. And none of them, by the way, I want to say, because this is important, none of the claims made deal with unimportant things. There is nothing easy about this issue. And I say that with respect, you know, to people on both sides of the spectrum who are sitting at the table. But some of the claims were things like, oh, well, abortion prior to Roe versus Wade was illegal and it was dangerous for women. Well, that's true. But when we assume that the unborn isn't human, then what we're missing is that it is lethal for the unborn. So dangerous for whom? It's not just dangerous for women. It was always dangerous for the unborn human beings who were being killed. Another claim is about abortion. The issue is about equality. It's about bodily integrity, a view of life. It's about who should make these important decisions. Well, back to that question, does that equality extend to every human being? What about the unborn? You can even look at, there was a large portion toward the end of the film centered around Wendy Davis and the filibuster that she did in Texas as decisions were being made. And her quote was even telling, because she talked about the beauty and the wonder that is human life. And we all believe in that, she said. But she said, I also believe that women already here are beautiful and deserve to live, to determine the direction of their lives, to be recognized as full people. And even just in saying that one, as if, these women aren't going to be full people if they're not allowed to abort. That's already a huge assumption. But what about the unborn human beings who are already here? They're being discounted entirely. So because the filmmakers never addressed that central question, what ended up happening is that throughout the rest of the film, the claims that were being made just begged that question and left it hanging.
You wrote about the assumptions that undergird the right of abortion are, you say, cut from the same cloth as those bolstering any other form of bigotry that results in gross injustice. Can you unpack that for us? How does that relate to abortion?
Yeah. Again, gosh, none of this is easy. But the pro-life argument is that scientifically, from the very beginning, the unborn are human beings, living, distinct, and whole human beings. And it's embryology, the field of science that is dedicated to the study of embryos, that actually backs that up. Philosophically, there's no relevant difference between unborn human beings and born ones that would make it okay to kill those that are unborn. Or at that earlier stage of development. So these differences that we're looking at that we could even point out between unborn human beings and born ones, as Stephen Schwartz would tell us, the philosopher, are differences in size, in level of development, in environment, which is location, and in degree of dependency. That's his kind of famous acronym, SLED. But really, those are the only areas of difference you can point out between unborn human beings and born one. And none of those differences say, oh, we can kill this class of human beings, but not this one. And if we look at other forms of bigotry and other injustices, even those that the filmmakers are rightly against, things like racism, things like sexism, we can see that undergirding those are the same types of questions. What does it mean to be human? And how do we determine human value? Those other forms of bigotry would say that human value is determined by something like gender or something like skin color or ethnicity, which is rightly, is arbitrary and wrong to think. So when we look at abortion, what we're doing is just adopting another form of bigotry, and it's inconsistent.
You talked about a few moments ago that more than one person in the film, and this is a common apologetic for anybody that's pro-choice, that makes the claim that, we need to control our own bodies, especially women, and that's the basis of like civil rights. And as a matter of fact, that's the whole, kind of subtitle of the film's marketing campaign, Who Decides? My control over my body. And one person in the film said, it's the basis, quote, it's the basis of democracy that you control your own body, and it's the basis of hierarchy and totalitarian regimes that you don't. So how do, that is not just the film, but that's a lot of people that I know that are very stridently pro-choice. That's something that they will bring up. Part of our democracy is that we have individual rights and we have the right to decide what happens to our own body, not the government. That's a quintessential apologetic from a pro-choice person. So how is someone who's the pro-life apologist respond to that?
Yeah, it's a sticky one. And the wording is strong. We all believe in freedom, and nobody wants a totalitarian regime. So we have to really look beyond that to what's really being talked about and assumed here. Autonomy is kind of a word of the day. And what autonomy assumes is that autonomy is enough. Like, human dignity is not really where we need to go to say we all matter by virtue of being human. But autonomy is it. We have freedom to do to and with our bodies as we please. Now, that's a big assumption. And I think it's a false assumption. Even just coming from someone who is unapologetically Christian, if Christianity is true, and I think there are excellent reasons to believe that it is, we already exist with limited freedoms by virtue of being created. We exist in a relationship with a creator. But we can look beyond that just to what we observe in the world around us. People are not free to do with their bodies whatever they please. We have laws in our nation against things like prostitution, against illegal drug use, and other harmful behaviors. And, you know, the pro-lifers are arguing abortion is such a harmful behavior, and in fact, in such a way that it infringes upon another's bodily autonomy. I think the person who made that argument best, and, you know, someone who studies pro-life apologetics, was Judith Jarvis Thompson when she wrote that 1971 article that included her violinist analogy. And you know, I would encourage people to go and read it. But I think ultimately her argument fails because it does assume some things about pregnancy that we just don't see in everyday life. For one thing, and just to name a couple quickly, it assumes that pregnancy in and of itself is not a good thing on the face of it. You know, the assumption kind of at the outset of this mindset is that pregnancy is some kind of disease that needs to be treated, when that's not what we observe. You know, as Frances Beckwith would write, or did write in Defending Life, if a woman's in a car accident and is brought into the hospital unconscious, and a doctor sees that she's pregnant, the doctor is not going to automatically perform an abortion. The doctor now flips gears. He has two patients to treat. So we don't view pregnancy as a disease. The other thing that autonomy really assumes is that consent to sex is not the same thing as consent to pregnancy, when pregnancy is a natural outcome of the sex act. So there's a lot there that could be talked about and dealt with, and even more dealing with kind of the parallels between her violinist analogy and what pregnancy is. But at the end of the day, autonomy is not enough. You know, autonomy kind of presupposes human dignity. And so we have to look underneath and see what we're really talking about. And if abortion does take the life of an innocent human being, then morally, it's very wrong.
I also want to point our listeners to an article that deals with this issue that, you know, Jarvis Thompson's violinist analogy, and it's free online at our website. It's called Suffer the Violinist, Why the Pro-Abortion Argument from Bodily Autonomy Fails. And so if you want to just dig a little bit deeper into that whole argumentation and find out how a pro-life apologist would respond to it, please go to our website. Well, so I guess I want to ask, we watched this film, if Christians watched this film, how do we move forward given what this film leaves viewers? I mean, I find it a little bit kind of like stereotyping a little, you know, with Christian side, they kind of put the political stuff in. And so it, you know, at the very end of it, actually, it's all about the political, which made me think they cut some of that stuff in right at the very end before it was released, right around the time of it doesn't include Kavanaugh, but it does include Neil Gorsuch's confirmation process in the film. So how do we move forward with this after viewing this film?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think for those who choose to view it, I think it's important to pay attention and listen to what the film is saying. One thing that you can walk away with the film understanding that I think is vital to discourse is that the pro-choice people interviewed in the film care about someone. They are driven by compassion, and they believe that what they are doing is good and true and right for women. Certainly, they believe differently about what the unborn is and about, you know, what even the scientific evidence that we do have, although the film would say that we're not scientifically grounded. I think that's blatantly false, points to as far as the pro-life position. But if we miss that people are actually caring about someone in all of this, then we're not going to handle conversations on this issue well. As soon as we've made this an us versus them, you know, the whole point of a culture war, it would mean you're trying to destroy the other side. But there are people on both sides of this issue and people matter. So I think that should temper our discourse going forward. And I think it's an important lesson to walk away from the film with. But when we are talking about it, when we are realizing these things, we have to remember those basic pro-life tenets. Number one, The question at the center of the debate is, what is the unborn? And we have to keep our eyes and our focus on that like a laser when it comes to conversations over this issue. I hear you saying this justification should be why abortion is allowed, but what is the unborn? Should we be able to kill human beings for that reason? Innocent human beings in this case. So we have to keep our eye on the ball and stay focused, but also be gracious. And I think at the end of the day, to remember, as Christians, we are optimists. God is on his throne, and God is capable of doing wonderful things. I was listening to Lauren Daigle even just this morning on my way into the office, and her song, we call out to dry bones, come alive. We can do that because we serve a God who resurrects from the dead, so he can redeem this. So all of those things and much, much more, but that's in a nutshell.
I would say that I would really like listeners to think about watching this film. I think one thing that I appreciate about Christian apologetics is that we actually deal with the arguments that people make on their other side, and we actually read their books and we watch their movies. And I'm not sure, because those things were not asked, I'm just wondering if some of those other people that they were interviewing, all the pro-choice people, have actually interacts with the pro-life material, philosophical material. And that's what I would want everyone to do, is to have civil conversations. And in fact, our current issue, volume 41, number 4, covers stories about how to have a civil conversation with pro-choice activists. Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Megan. So Megan, it's the fall, it's November, pumpkin spice latte or pumpkin pie?
Oh my goodness, I have to choose. Pumpkin spice latte, because coffee is life.
What's one of your favorite things about fall?
Colors. The colors, the air, the smells, all of it. I can't just pick one, Melanie. That's too hard.
And how old were you when you became a Christian?
It's hard for me to answer. I think I was younger than I think I was. I would say that Jesus was my savior before he was my Lord. But I will answer 19. Because that is truly when he became my Lord.
Well, thanks, Megan, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks, Melanie. I so appreciate the work of Christian Research Institute.
Today's guest is Megan Almond, and Megan has written a web-exclusive film review about the new Netflix documentary, which is available right now streaming on Netflix, called Reversing Roe. And her article is called Reversing Reason, and it's available free online at our website, equip.org. To read more articles that grapple with these ethical issues from a Christian perspective, please subscribe to our journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50. And to subscribe online, please go to our website, equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. Follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram, and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes. And when you rate and review our podcast, it helps others to find our content. So please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged. It's Hank's new audio podcast. You'll follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.